Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SuiteOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's July 10th, 2024. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We are a DevOps accelerator focused on funded startups and enterprises that helps teams who are overwhelmed with AWS. And we do this by leveraging our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So if you or your team has been banging your head against the wall with underperforming infrastructure, especially with Terraform, reach out to us. Go to cloudposse.com/meet. Again, cloudposse.com/meet. Answer a few quick questions and you'll book a meeting with me directly. So, how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format is informal. Engage as much as you'd like, ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. And for those of you on the recording, we host these calls live. So, don't miss out. Join us live by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. All right, let's jump into some news and announcements. I don't have much, as I was saying a moment ago. So I was impacted by the hurricane here in Houston. Just got power back last night. So grateful for that. You have no idea how much it sucks to be in 100-degree weather without AC and trying to sleep. All right. So one thing that did catch my eye in between news related to the hurricane was AWS Cloud Shell releasing support for VPCs. This means you can actually deploy this interactive web shell within a VPC to access resources. For example, for triaging, think of it like a lightweight Bastion. When you couple that together with the native support for let's see here if this works again, with the native support for Docker, in Cloud Shell, which was, I believe, released back in January. It's pretty convenient to create a toolbox image that you can then run in a Cloud Shell if you're operating in kind of a restricted environment where you don't want work happening on a local workstation. If you're not familiar with GeoDesic, which is Cloud Posse's toolbox container, this is an open source project that we've worked on for 5+ years. It bundles a lot of the common tools of our trade, so things like Terraform, kubectl. But more than that, it includes Cloud Posse's package registry. Cloud Posse's package registry is how we disseminate a lot of the common tools of our trade. These are things that we've used over the years. So it's just a really easy way to install packages. So AWS Cloud Shell with Docker, with GeoDesic is a cool pattern if you're interested. Any questions on that before I move on to the next announcement? All right. Another one that's caught my eye on Reddit was Pug. There's this resurgence of text-based UIs, TUIs for short, that have been coming out now more and more related to Terraform. So this is kind of cool. Interactive way of interacting with vanilla Terraform without a framework. Of course, if you use GeoDesic, oh, sorry, if you use Atmos by Cloud Posse, you get some of the similar functionality as you get with this. This seems to be more optimized specifically for Terraform and like targeting resources. If you're targeting resources, there's a chance that your architecture might be off with using Terraform. I would consider it an anti-pattern overall, effective for local development and things that you're working on. But if you're targeting resources in order to roll out changes with Terraform, chances are the scope of your root module is too large. And you have like you have cycles or things like that. All right. That's all the news announcements I had. That's it. Nice to meet you all. Talk to you next week. No, joking. Anyone else have something to share?
I added one link to the chat.
All right. Let's see here. pulling this up. So GitHub, oh, GPU hosted runners are available. Are those available for open source as well, or only under paid tiers?
Well, yeah, it looks like they're only available under accounts that have organization or enterprise. Doesn't look like it'll be freely available. It's the larger runner, which I think you gotta actually shell out a little bit of cash for. Which kind of makes sense because I don't think they would want everybody just getting in there, tying up GPUs for, compiling Hello or
GitHub hosts all AI
yeah.
language model generation for open source. That would be phenomenal.
But yeah, the cool thing that I see with this, and I'm pretty sure it's probably customer driven, in that folks that are building AI based applications or adding AI to their CI/CD in some form or fashion, instead of having their hosted, their self-hosted runners rather, they want hosted runners so they could just, spin them up in their org or whatever, and just kind of simplifies your CI/CD and management and that type of stuff. But you got GPUs, you can just tap into them. It seems like it's pretty straightforward. Windows, Linux. The images that they use, everything's pretty much built in. There might be a few things that you got to install out of the gate, which kind of sucks. But it's one was an NVIDIA image for the Linux stuff, and it was a Windows, I don't know if it was 2019 or what, for the Windows image. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's something to look into if you're running AI, or rather building AI applications, and you want to use GitHub Actions.
Yeah, it makes sense. I gotta say that hosting GitHub Actions, on the surface, it's so easy. And when you start trying to do anything serious with it, is actually a lot of work. I have to say, we've been dealing with this with a lot of our customers lately. And yeah, hosted runners by GitHub are a little bit more expensive, but so is the time and effort of doing self-hosted right. Just like, deploying MongoDB on Kubernetes is a one-line Helm command, right? It's that easy, or is it, right? You don't have the backups, you don't have the failover, restoring is not automated, upgrades are not automated, all these other things make it complicated. GitHub Action, scaling GitHub Action runners on Kubernetes across all the different, node pool sizes that you need, leveraging Carpenter, making sure that Carpenter consolidation is working and not just killing your jobs randomly in the right way, ensuring that your IOPS are appropriately tuned so you can run linting in parallel, are just some of the things that we've had to deal with in the past week here. So I'm feeling pretty burned out on the Actions Runner controller on Kubernetes. Curious, I heard someone else using runs on again. We talked about it on office hours a few weeks ago. Anyone else using runs on since we talked or previously? Just curious what your experience has been. It's a easier way to self-host apparently, but I don't know more about it. All right, cool. Any other announcements, or we can just jump right into Q&A. And I realized I was opening that the wrong window. All right, let's go to Q&A. So this is the part of Office Hour segment where we, are happy to answer questions. You have access to everyone here on the session. We're about 18, 20 people. If you have any questions, bring it up and get a good answer. Hey, Venkat, I see you raising your hand.
Awesome. Yeah, so I'm working on a centralized logging project, and every time I do this, it always feels complex. I'm just wondering if there's any standards I should be looking at or frameworks. So right now, we're We looked at Datadog and stuff. It's fairly costly for the amount of logs we have, and so we're looking at most likely self-hosting OpenSearch. And so my typical experience with Elastic, which I believe OpenSearch is more or less based off of, is usually have a separate index per log type. I'm trying to avoid the overhead of having a separate index per log type and trying to shove everything into the same index, which I'm sure there's some trade-offs there. But I was wondering if anyone here has done something similar to avoid some of the either Terraform burden or API burden of adding new indexes and all that within OpenSearch.
So, I mean, OpenSearch itself is also not, I mean, it's free in terms of open source, and open source is obviously free, as we all know. It doesn't cost anything to maintain it, it doesn't cost anything to deploy it, and so forth. Just talking facetiously there. It's also a beast when it gets really large. If you have failures, the IO of, bringing up new nodes is pretty costly and so forth. Not speaking from a lot of experience on what I'm about to say, so just prefacing that, but I really love this, after I've been introduced to it, this architecture of Loki, where it's taking this poor man's approach at doing log search at scale when you know what labels you want to search for. And it's taking basically a hash-based approach to searching, where you index all the data as it's flowing in into specific objects on an object store like S3, and then you just do a brute force search on those objects. So it doesn't, if you don't know ahead of time what you're going to be searching for, it's not going to be performant. But if you know you're, well, I'm going to be looking at this service for the last 2 days, that's not, for a lot of things, that often won't be too much data. And then it just does a grep on it, essentially. And there's almost no infrastructure you've got to host. It's stateless. It uses S3 as a backend. I
Yeah,
think it's pretty
we're
cool.
actually running Loki at the moment, not for the centralized, but we're doing a local load cluster itself, and it definitely works easy. It works well in terms of it just works. Like it uses S3 or another object store. The problem that we ran into there, the reason we're not using it for centralized, is we found that our costs are fairly high on even just the local cluster. We're seeing a lot. It's actually not even storage; it's all the put and list operations that occur, where
And
we're
those
just
are adding up so much.
it's more than the storage.
Really?
And I haven't gotten to the bottom of it if it's a misconfiguration, but like my one of our dev environments that I run for myself, I do a fair amount of querying and Loki, and like, wow, this is more than everything else you're paying for. So
Really?
and
And
uh
that's
yeah.
S3, which is so cheap to begin with.
It's not even the storage, it's just that list.
Yeah,
Off
just
of the list
the
API
API request.
operations. And I've seen other complaints about this on GitHub, where there's some tuning we could do on the chunks. I haven't dug into what the trade-offs are. We had a requirement for one of the customers we work with to do shipping to their Datadog. So we added Fluent Operator, which is a way you can easily ship to a lot of different syncs. So Datadog was the initial reason, and you can actually support Elasticsearch, OpenSearch, you can support like 10 other syncs, including another Loki instance. And so we're thinking about just centralizing on on OpenSearch, because I could run that off EBS and also shift around the cloud
But I
and
cannot believe for a moment that S3, even if you're paying for S3 API requests, that S3 API requests are more expensive than Elastic OpenSearch compute.
yeah,
There was an open issue on the Loki project at one point where that I remember seeing that some guy said that he was just doing a proof of concept and he ended up with over a billion put requests in a month, or something like that. So it ended up like, and I remember there was something that Loki was going to do to try to address that, but I never followed up on if that happened or not. So it's definitely a known issue. It's not something that Venkat is just imagining here.
There are some things that we could do that could reduce those costs. We're still experimenting with that. Before we had Fluent Operator, we were doing manual exports. So we had written a job that would fetch the data out of Loki once an hour and basically dump that to S3. This way we had an archival based off customer requirements. Now that we have Fluent Operator, we're just running a secondary job that basically just scrapes similar to Promptail and pushes to S3 or whatever that long-term archival requirement is. But Loki's great. The labels, there are some caveats to that in terms of don't have too many labels is what we've been told. Aside from that, if you just stick to the minimum, it does work pretty well. Loki QL is not hard. We haven't been able to create great dashboards yet. I'm still struggling on that for like a DevX experience. But yeah, if you have the ability, if you just give your users, I think it's like not editor, but it's like it's an explore option. There's like another permission in Grafana. They can actually like play around and explore data. Then they can usually self-serve. But nothing beats Datadog though at the end of the day.
Pay to play.
Yeah.
I've been asking customers kind of what is their Datadog spend to AWS spend. It's a really interesting ratio without, screwing the pooch on like how much you're actually spending, but just knowing the ratio. And I've heard it as high as 83 cents on the dollar. Now, this, I'm sure for smaller environments actually on AWS, that it's inverse, like that it could be like, $1.50 or $1.20 for every,
we've been trying to figure out the ROI of what we offer because we do a lot of the self-hosted versus promoting Datadog.
Yeah.
And worth talking offline about this as well. But when we did the math, when you go with if we ship all of our data to Datadog, it would cost us $600-$700 a month. And then doing it on Loki, it's just free. $600 is more than what our cluster costs to run. So you basically get it for free with Loki and it works. But then there's those performance limitations and scaling.
Well, you were saying the cost of Loki and Matt was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's cheaper, but then it's still, we're a small startup. That's the best way to put it. And so I'd like to, if we're going to do consolidated logging, I feel like OpenSearch or trying to avoid those fees would be nice. Then we could shift it between clouds. That's a personal preference. I also have to balance out what's the overhead of that. To your point, is if OpenSearch is a beast to maintain, we'll probably just look for Aven or another provider that we could just use as a managed OpenSearch or somewhere.
I would also first explore or exhaust the options for AWS. Like you can probably get away with reduced redundancy, for example. I don't know if that reduces the cost of API requests.
I looked at that as well. I went pretty deep on trying to get those calls down. I was even wondering if there was a caching layer. And I think Nginx made a project that could help you cache requests. Yeah. But then I don't know if that I didn't try it out yet. It looks like it would be a total hack.
I posted the issue. I found it in Loki and it looks like most of the people that were having this problem, it had to do with the fact that they were indexing on timestamp. And then timestamp, because it's down to the millisecond, was actually causing the problem, like where they would have so many indexes. So they give you like a regex you can use to index the timestamp to like drastically cut down on that issue. I think there's a guy. It said, "How did you fix this?" And someone linked to another issue. Bad performance, slow queries. I'll post that issue that they link to. But that actually seems to have fixed it for a lot of people.
Cool. I will take a look at this. I wasn't across that. As you can see, I commented any luck on that first issue.
Did I open up the wrong one?
The second issue I just posted is the solution. The first one talks about the problem.
Okay. Got it.
How do you do it? Do you like the querying capabilities, Eric or Matt, like on Loki versus what we've traditionally used, like Elasticsearch. Like, have you, yeah, just curious, have you guys been able to do much exploration with Loki?
I would need to, yeah, deflect to my team. Also, I don't know how much, like, so Dan was on our team, responsible for setting it up, and we released our components for that as well. So if anyone is interested in doing that, if you go to, I believe, Terraform AWS components modules, let's see here if it's here. EKS. Loki should be here. Yeah, here's our Loki component for our EKS solution at Cloud Posse. But yeah, Dan, do you have anything to add to this? Are you still here?
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I mean, our Loki implementation at the moment is still fairly basic, but it is, of course, really customizable. So you can set up whatever configuration you want with it just by passing the values to the basic help or the Loki chart. But yeah, we haven't done too much in depth yet. Is there something specific that?
Yeah, he was asking about the query language. What did you get to play with that much?
Yeah, a little bit, but mostly what we're doing now is more on the prompt tail end of it. So we're querying in prompt tail, and then Loki's just collecting from there. So I haven't really done too much on the Loki specific query.
Sure. Yeah, just curious. I've always liked how in Elastic I was able to do like SQLite queries. With Loki, I've been struggling a little with the QL. It works for basic stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Not
That's
too much.
awesome. You guys have published this. I assume it's a self-deployable unit. It spins up EC2 and everything.
No. So I mean, so right now, so on my screen you can see here. So this is in our component library. Components for Cloud Posse are things that we can deploy with Atmos. Atmos is our automation tool. So for Terraform, they are root modules. So this is a root module that deploys Loki on because we're inside the EKS folder here. These
Oh,
are
got
all
it.
the things we deploy on EKS itself. So things like Promtail, Prometheus, Scraper, Reloader.
Yeah, so it deploys the Loki Helm chart, but it also deploys S3 for storage. So it does do everything it needs to do, but with the Helm implementation.
Oh, awesome. Cool. Do you guys run this on same servers as your apps, or do you guys set up like a dedicated Loki ingress or Loki cluster?
So yeah, it's configurable, or I mean, it's based on whatever architecture. I believe the default architecture that we have is deploying one Loki instance per cluster with a dedicated bucket per instance. And then typically our clusters are in different accounts. So you'd have a dev cluster, staging cluster, therefore a dev bucket, staging bucket, dev
Yeah,
buckets.
cool. Yeah, that's basically what we're doing. The only thing I'm sure you guys are doing this as well is we have like a separate node pool for it. This way, if it takes up too much memory or whatever, we don't have to worry
Yeah, I don't
about.
believe we did that, but we did deploy. So we deploy managed Grafana separately, and then we deploy that in a centralized account. And then it is configured over to connect over the transit gateway to Loki on each cluster. So the cluster can be hosed. And yeah, that would prevent us from looking at the logs if that cluster is hosed in this model. But it wouldn't prevent other accessing other clusters. And this was really just a cost consideration to do it this way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. Appreciate all the details on that. Thanks a lot, guys. And I'll take a look at both those issues, or really the
For
second one. But yeah, thank you.
what it's worth, really quickly, when we deploy EKS, we deploy the node pools managed by Carpenter usually. So if you did in our default setup want to have certain nodes that ran Loki on it, you could actually use taints and tolerances to make it run on certain groups, and then you can actually, using Carpenter, have it spin up, those things, or deprioritize it, or do whatever you want pretty easily out of the box. So even though we don't do it by default, it's configurable pretty easily.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I don't know if you guys have run into this, but when you guys do node pool upgrades, if you guys are running into a random 504 gateway timeout from Loki, I've narrowed that down, and apparently Loki's Nginx caches the DNS entries of the reader and writer pods for an extended period of time. So you end up just having to kill the gateway, and then it refreshes it. And it's like a known issue, and apparently there's no fix for it beyond killing the pod. So if you get random 504s, that is it. It took me a few months to figure that one out. It just kept happening. Couldn't like figure out when or what circumstances. Last thing I want to share, I'm just going to throw out a link. You folks have already probably been across this. I just came across this recently. Apparently, the incident many months ago of like high requests to S3 being... so this is the... I'm paying a lot for unauthorized requests on AWS S3. And it was actually the Loki project. And it was because of some defaults. They made two Helm chart updates, one being the latest 5.something and the latest 6.something. And so they have the versions in there. But since you're using Helm as well, given you've already configured your S3 buckets, you should not be impacted. But just throwing this out there, especially for anyone else on the call that's using Loki. In our case, we had all three buckets as they described below configured correctly. But yeah.
I believe they're, aren't they, isn't this the thing they're not going to charge for anymore?
They are not, but this was the project that...
Loki was the source of that problem.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
They had a default bucket name, and so therefore all the logs were being written to that default bucket name. When the guy actually created a bucket with that default bucket name, it wrote all everyone's logs who didn't have it configured to that bucket.
They didn't name shame the project. They just said it was an open source project. Yeah. All right, so we come full circle now. The name of that project that spawned that whole fiasco was Loki. Okay. Closure at last.
I really appreciate that they mentioned the article and everything too, the original one. But yeah, nothing to be alarmed about from my takeaway in the article. And if you're not already on the newer versions of the Helm chart, it'd be a good idea to upgrade and fix your references. But it looks like the ownership of those buckets were deemed safe, I guess. So like you're okay if you didn't have it configured correctly. Cool. I think that's all I had on the topic there. Thanks a lot for the info, guys. Appreciate it.
No problem. One thing to add to Arthur's point that he recommends a monitoring cluster. So we have something a little bit similar in our setup. We have a automation cluster, but where we do things like self-hosted GitHub runners, like Eric was talking about earlier. So we had to make a decision about where we draw the lines of how to separate monitoring configurations across like a dev, staging, prod, and automation account. So we do centralize things like the Grafana dashboard. So like that is a great thing to have centralized, but then we wanted to separate all the data sources. Well, so then you could ask like, okay, well then what level do you separate it? Do you deploy Loki once in the automation account and have a collect Promptail scraping configurations from all of the platform accounts? But no, we wanted to have them entirely self-contained in each one of those platform accounts. So like the Loki buckets are all in dev for dev. The Loki buckets for prod are in prod, entirely separate. So it's a good point. You might want to separate those separately if you want to do a monitoring cluster.
Well, I think the happy compromise to Arthur's point would be along the lines of what Matt was saying, creating a separate node pool maybe for some of those resources, kind of for like critical workloads. Or for example, what we already do is we deploy managed node pools to run the controllers themselves. Maybe the managed node pools is where Loki should run as well, or do a separate node pool with Carpenter.
Right, but you're still deploying Loki three times. So if you had a monitoring cluster and you deployed Loki a single time there instead, you wouldn't need to manage Loki and dev staging and prod. You just need to manage.
But then you need to manage.
But
now you need to manage the access to the data, which is centralized. So I still like the idea of keeping it separated. Otherwise, it's whack-a-mole in terms of problems we're solving.
And dev might overlap with prod. It's not as easy to roll out changes.
Yeah. So
also you need a place to test and validate your updates to, like, Loki, yeah, etc. itself before you break things. So it's good to have them in separate environments.
Yeah, I like that. All right. Any additional questions we can talk about? We've got about 25 minutes left. For the, was it, I can't say that, for Mr. Beetle, raise their hand.
Thanks. Hello. I want to ask about what's your get go on implementing OAuth2 and ODC, OpenID Connect in Kubernetes?
Yeah. I'm probably not going to be the most qualified anymore. We used to always distribute OIDC proxy together with our solutions, but the project went through a few hands and was almost shut down. I believe Venkat does something really nice with this. Venkat, you want to talk about what you're doing?
Yeah, I can talk about what we're doing. We don't really have developers accessing through kubectl, but we do use Argo CD, and we do use the Dex IDP project to help facilitate all of that. So the way we've set up our environment, and I don't know how much of this is going to be helpful, Dex is more of like a federated IDP more than your source of truth. So you can do a YAML configuration within it. But so we use GitHub as our IDP. And then from GitHub, we use Dex to federate. And then we tie in Grafana and everything else into that. And I believe Kubernetes can possibly support it as well. But we don't expose Kubernetes to our end users.
And you're not using a proxy. And that you're relying that Argo CD already supports OIDC, I think, in that case.
Yeah, I believe it's
via Dex.
Yeah, through Dex. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Dex is configured with some credentials back to GitHub.
Yeah.
Does that supporting single sign on?
Mm-hmm. Am I... yeah. So we have SSO using GitHub IDs. Ties back to your Okta as well. So the way we've implemented is if you're using Okta, Azure SSO, or any of those solutions, as long as you're set up on GitHub, it basically trickles all the way down to our Argo CD instance.
Okay, yeah. Lately, I've been experimenting with ORI products. I quite like their implementation of the different services like UDC and UDC and OAuth2. They are like they're creating a separate microservice for each one.
What service was that you said? I missed.
It was ORI product, Kratos and Hydra and OathKeeper. They have three products.
Hydra was it?
Hydra with the Y.
Oh, Hydra.
Hydra, yeah. Okay. ORI. Okay, yeah, that one, yeah.
Well, yeah.
It was a quite interesting project. I wrote a blog about it.
Was it easy to get up and running?
Not quite easy, but yeah, you have to dig a little bit in the documentation to understand it. But yeah, their Helm file was quite good. They mentioned everything. When you try to add, I mean, login page or sign up page, you have to add your own. But they have a ready project with sign in and sign up HTML.
I forgot to mention the one that we've used many times over the years, but it is an enterprise solution more or less. Plus, they have pulled back on some of the features or some of the things they do with the community edition. I think, I forget exactly if it's they stopped distributing binaries or whatnot, but Gravitational provides a zero trust model as well that extends to SSH as well. So that's really nice. Essentially manages an IDP with session recording and so forth.
Mm-hmm. To your comment around having that login page, on Dex, they give you one automatically. And then if you want to override or customize it, you can rebuild the container. And if you know some HTML and CSS, you can do that pretty easily. I do not know HTML and CSS that well, so I did not try. And then
I am in the same position as you.
OAuth. I don't know if you're using any of these as like an OAuth proxy. You mentioned SSH, Eric, but I know Nginx has like a utility where you can have like you have an unauthenticated web app, and then you could throw an OAuth proxy in front of it and have everything authenticated behind it. We're using Primarium, just an open source version, their Primarium ingress controller. Been really happy.
Pomerium was the one I was trying to remember earlier. And I thought you were using, but you didn't mention it. So then I guess they
Oh
switched.
yeah, we're talking about Kubernetes access, and then I don't know. We're talking about a lot of things around authentication. So this is the one we use to. So before you can actually log into Argo CD, you have to hit. You hit a page which is authentic. You basically have to go through Primarium. So there's a layer of authentication on there as well, and that's pretty transparent after you do the initial login. And then everything in our control plane that developers use is protected by Primarium. And this has been working out great. We deploy it using Argo CD and customize. And their GitHub support has been great as well. So strongly recommend it. And they might have a control plane hosted version, but like a cloud hosted version. I have not tried that yet. We're doing self-hosted with their customized Helm chart, couple overrides. Happy to share that if that's helpful for anyone. And it's been super easy. We are not doing the HA mode for our needs, but if you do the HA, you might need a Postgres backend. And single node instance, single container has been working out well.
And this project has been around for quite a while. And as you alluded to, it's open source. So haven't done it ourselves, but if we were asked, I think we would try it.
Yeah, they also support yeah, they have pretty good ingress options. There's definitely some upsells and the annotations. I think if you need like a machine-based API, like a service account type thing, that gets a little trickier. But we found ways to get the cookie and be able to do our API calls for certain things that need it. But yeah.
All right. Any more questions we can get answered? We have another 20 minutes or so if there's any questions.
Anyone here using Tempo from Grafana for like tracing and I guess APM or even Signals, SIGNOZ? I don't know if I'm saying that one correctly.
Yeah, no, we haven't played with it yet.
Yeah, we've had asked for it because of how cost prohibitive Datadog is, but I feel like you don't get the same value from these open source solutions for APM because it's instrumentation and everything. But I have not messed around with the OTel very much, so mostly just curious if anyone's tried saving on those costs from New Relic or APM and rolling their own.
Yeah, doesn't Grafana Cloud have something?
I think they call it Tempo, or
Okay, it
maybe.
is Tempo. Yeah.
And then there's also Memer, which I believe is their version of Prometheus. I'm not sure what the differences are between theirs and open source Prometheus, but yeah.
Tracing back end.
It supposedly uses object storage as well, which is interesting.
Isn't WS6 Ray is the same as Grafana Tempo, and I'm not sure about that.
What's the name?
WS6 Ray.
Yeah, I haven't used that. I don't know if anyone could speak to that either. ADBS X-Ray. I thought that was Lambda specific, or maybe when it first came out, it was.
No,
No, there's a ton of services supported by X-Ray.
Oh, cool.
The key though is that whatever's taking the ingress of your request basically has to support X-Ray, so like API gateway or any of those things, and then it tags the request all the way down through AWS services that get called. But then you can actually export or expose your x-ray data to OTel as well. So like, I think the collection is really good on x-ray. I haven't been a big fan of the visualization and exploration and things like that, but the actual like tracing part of it works really well.
Yeah, that's been my typical experience with APM in general, is even though you pay a fair amount for it from Datadog or New Relic, you just have these dashboards and visualizations out of the box. We just get a tremendous amount of value. So if you're not getting that, then it's hard to use the APM tool, at least for me, but yeah. And I'm not even sure if Grafana offers that with Tempo, but yeah.
My limited experience with tracing was setting up Grafana, a few other things, and a part of that solution, I also sideloaded Jaeger. Some of it was using early OpenTelemetry collection and stuff like that. But most of the experience, this was on a Python app and also some Java and I believe some Erlang, so Beam servers. And really what I found was you definitely don't get any dashboard features from something like Jaeger, for instance. But if the developers know how to instrument and they do a good job instrumenting their code, it's generally not really a big deal. That's kind of the weird part about it. I think that the dashboards are a useful discoverability tool. But if you are familiar with where your code breaks and where the critical flows are, and you just surround those with instrumentation, then it gets pretty easy to self-host as well, because then you can do sampling and you can say that, well, I already know that if this is only happening 10% of the time, then I don't need to care about it. And you start to then you're able to scale down a lot of what you have. We had a ClickHouse, I believe, was set up with all of it, and that was the self-hosted community version of that. And at first it was all the wrong size, but once folks understood where to put their instrumentation, it was not hard at all to maintain. But that's, you know, that takes effort. That takes time. You have to invest into observability. So,
cool. Appreciate the insights on that, Jeremy. Thank you.
All right. Any additional questions for today? Can be on anything, pretty much.
I thought I would mention today the topic of moving off of Circle, and I apologize, I joined a little bit late on the call, but I don't think this was discussed. That there is, if you're using Cypress, the open source part of it is, leveraged by something called Sorry Cypress, if you want to self-host your Cypress dashboard. So I was curious if anybody here has used Sorry Cypress. It's hilarious that it exists. But it is for folks trying to save money on it, and it comes up with something like Circle CI, because I believe the license in Circle CI can include Cypress, and then when you want to move off of Circle CI due to cost, then now you have to pay for Cypress, and then you fall down this rabbit hole of trying to not rewrite all of your CI. Anyways, I was just curious if anybody's used Sorry Cypress. It's a hilarious project, by the name, I mean. So far, it looks like as if it's a compelling use case for folks who want to try to manage their costs for CI.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Obviously, being an open source company, it kind of hits hard. I know we were even at Cloud Posse talking about this with another thing, and Matt Calhoun brought up a really good point that it's really undermining the ability for that project then to exist. And it changed our course as it related to that other project when I heard that and thought about it. So when I see this, I'm like, man, are they not allowed to, profit off their project in some way. So I don't know. Here we are at Cloud Posse using Terraform and not using Terraform Cloud, and I
And
get
there's
it.
tofu.
And then there's OpenTofu, which was created because of that. So it's an interesting one. Terraform, I rationalize it differently because it's a language, but it's all the same in the same in the end.
Yeah. Anyways, I was just mentioning it because I was curious if anybody had used it and had some war stories or thoughts.
I'm so curious though, why, what about, what is, I didn't spend time to understand the root problem there, and I don't know if you were involved in the thread enough. What was it about Cypress? Like, why could Cypress be parallelized on Circle CI without ancillary services?
The
The
license
license. Oh, the
is
license
what I
specifically?
understand. This is my understanding is that when you pay for Circle CI, they kind of roll in that Cypress gets that parallelization. Once you move off, no more parallel CI. So that's one of the reasons why when you go to the sorry Cypress like webpage, one of the first things that they'll is like get all of your parallelization that you wanted.
That's an
It's
interesting. That's a
marketing that
value
makes
add that's
itself.
bundled with Circle CI, more or less, that you get this.
I think that maybe the it things could have gone the other way where folks originally were paying for Cypress and they were like, what would be cheaper? Oh, Circle CI. But I don't know if that's really truly how people flow into one tool or the other.
All right. Well, thanks for bringing that up. We got 10 more minutes. Anything else? Ten more minutes.
Anyone using Claude AI?
Which one?
Claude AI? I've been
Yeah.
using ChatGPT, but I keep hearing about Claude as the new one to be using now. Like everyone's super looking.
I have been using Claude with so I got Coggy, which is the paid for search engine. Been loving Coggy because now it's like cord cutting. You don't get ads while you're searching for anything. But part of it, they include all the chat GPTs, all the like Claude, Gemini. And I've just been going through asking questions and sort of piloting different research things. And I've been pretty happy with Claude. I think it hallucinates, I think, a lot less than chat GPT on topics that are I think more niche, like say Terraform. But that's perhaps just the way that I talk to it. So, for what I'm doing daily, I tend to lean on Claude now.
Cool. You also mentioned Kagi, KAGI.com.
Yeah, Kagi. Yeah, and it's nice. They have a feature where, they have like the one click summarize a web page and other sorts of nice features. They let you go and just get rid of entire domains. It's a nice service. I like it. It's a little weird to add to your phone. You start to realize real fast, if you're not a main search engine, it's hard to add a different search engine to say your phone, but on the desktop, it's pretty easy to use.
Got it. Cool. Thank you.
Anyone
I,
else
yeah.
using Kagi? Curious. Or Kaji? Is it Kaji or Kagi?
I've just been saying Coggy, but I don't know. I've never really heard anybody say it out loud, and I never even checked the about page on how to pronounce it.
It feels weird to pay for search, but I'll have to try it out and see if I get value. But it just thinking, I've always had search for free, whether it was Yahoo.com back in the day or Google. Or AltaVista, or the handful search.
I think it's how much you use search.
Anything that on the internet that's free, you are the product.
Yeah.
Yeah,
You're
for
paying
me, I
for
think it's
it
the
in just a
time.
different way. Oh, you're muted, Venkat.
Oh, was Venkat trying to say something?
I thought so.
I,
Oh,
okay. All I was going to say is that I search daily on so many different topics and I context switch so much. It's nice that you can actually have preset tags for certain things. So I know if I'm searching for Terraform, I can just do bang TF and I won't get anything that's related to anything other than Terraform or bang K8 for if I need to search a topic on Kubernetes. If you've ever looked for, a particular technology, it's like one of those things that you usually have to go and box around it, but it's nice. It also has a leaderboard for blocked domains, which is great. I guarantee if you look at it, you'll just immediately start saying block, 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 block. It's just amazing how much more
Oh, nice.
yeah, it's really fun. But I shouldn't oversell it. It's obviously for folks who use search all the time. I think if you're already looking at like the first tier, like, oh, search 500 times a month, I don't do that. Then, I mean, whatever.
I mean,
Or no, it's 300.
it's not cost prohibitive, really, it looks like.
No. But yeah, the AI integration is pretty nice, I think,
Did
for what
they
it's
build their
worth.
own AI model, or are they using one of the other services, or?
I mean, they've got several different ones. I don't know if you want, I'll just share my screen and show you what they have, but
Yeah,
I don't know
sure.
if you're
Or
curious.
also maybe share some real world examples or something. If you remember something you've recently searched for or tried to do, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, let me see. Get my browser up here. So hope everybody can see that. Yeah, so let me see here. I know I was searching for, oh, this was a good example of where it was an interesting discussion. So I don't know if anybody's used EventBridge recently. So I think I started it out with like yeah. Can you use EKS service accounts to give permissions to, I think it was S3. That was one question that I had. And this one's using Claude 3 Opus. If I wanted to, I could just change it.
Oh, I see. This is what you were saying earlier. Now I get it.
Yeah, so you can go through. There's a few different modes. There's a code mode for like trying to generate code. There's a research mode for I haven't really used it too much, but apparently it's for more like assume that the AI doesn't know and that it fetch the information for you. But yeah, so there's like was researching service accounts on EKS and S3, and was eventually went down this to I won't exhaust it, but it was kind of a fun topic to look at the new pod identity stuff, which I know we don't favor, but I was just researching it again. And
So in
besides that,
this
there
mode,
was.
it's like a chat agnostic chat GPT where you basically get to pick which system you want to use, but you get a consistent UI. So it's le it feels less about search when you're using this chat and more just like regular chat. And does it keep track of your sessions with this like you do with chat GPT? I really like that.
Yeah, they last for about a week. And I forget how you preserve it, if you can even. I haven't really tried because usually after about a week I don't need it anymore. But I've absolutely powered down my computer, closed the web browser, reopened it up, and it gives a token to these. So you can't actually see it. But yeah, so the token up here, for instance, is the thread for that. I forget if you can share that with people. I haven't tried, but you might be able to.
I like that you get access to all of them. I think there was a thing called PoE that did something similar, but this sounds like you get search results if you click on research, right? I assume it's more Google search related.
Oh yeah. So if you go back over to here, this is just your regular search. I mean, there's like a basically
How does the tag thing, the exclusions work that you had mentioned, if you know, if that's
Oh
easy to get?
yeah, go for it. Yeah, no, this is fine for me. See here, zoom in the way again. Go over to settings. So there is, I think it is under personalized results, maybe. Or let's see here. I'll just have to hide everything from Zoom again. Oh yeah. So for instance, here's just like a basic place. There's a domain leaderboard though. And so if you look at this, this is like top blocked domains. Of course, Pinterest shows right up at the top, which is what I love, is that you could just absolutely go down, but then there's all sorts of other things on here that are just probably blockable.